Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, geology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com on this April the 7th on the West Coast, and now in the Eastern and Central time zones, it is April the 8th, the early morning hours. Welcome to the show. Last night, I got on a, first of all, I didn't have a guest last night, and I welcomed some calls, actually, got a call from Ron from Pennsylvania, who had quite a bit of information to share. And I was discussing a variety of things, and one of the things I brought up was the G20 meetings. And actually, there have been some recent publications going around the Internet in regard to what transpired at those meetings. There have been reports that a couple of bank directors from Citibank who have been impeding these international payments that we've talked about for a couple of years now on this show and on some other shows, they have been removed, eliminated is the term that the alphabet agencies like to use. And this has been cross-confirmed from various sources. People are not going to put up with the corruption anymore. And it's come to our attention that even certain factions in our military now are quite upset with what's going on because they realize that basically we are in the throes of a communist dictatorship. All you folks out there who have been rooting for Barack Obama, wake up. You have no idea what's going on. If you're still rooting for a usurper, someone who has not even provided a piece of ID, and he's sitting in the presidency of the United States, this is really a travesty, and I think it's more a travesty of the ignorance and the apathy and the denial amongst the American public. Now, it's not everyone who is in that state of belief. And so if you don't fit that picture, then you know I'm not talking to you. Still, I'm talking to my audience, but I'm not labeling you as such. And I basically said that I'm going to allow people now to make their own choices and their own decisions. I'll bring the information forward. You have trouble assimilating it in any way. I encourage you, as I usually do, to do your own research and draw your own conclusions. It's not up to me to provide you with your own personal solution. Only you can do that. I'm not asking you to give me a solution to what I perceive are my problems. And that's the way it is. That's the law of the universe. You have free will. And so if as a sovereign being, if you're exercising that free will, then you very well know that you can make your own choices. And it doesn't matter what I say about your choices. I can share with you what I know. I can share my research with you and hope that, if nothing else, I urge you or motivate you to look into some of these matters that we're talking about. Now, for the past couple of years, I've been talking about trillions of dollars that have been stolen and are being stolen and probably will continue to be stolen. And people said, oh, it's a fairy tale, it's poppycock, and other words, other adjectives to describe that. And yet, that's exactly what's going on. It's now hitting the mainstream media. And even though the media lies and they have either no idea about what's going on, which I can't really believe because they've been emailed the same things that I've written, the things that Christopher Story and others have written about this massive worldwide scandal, and you're paying attention to terms like the bailout, which are nothing but legalization of the criminality so that they can kickstart their corruption, which has been halted through the freezing of offshore bank accounts and the collapse of banks. The holding companies like AIG and others who have gone down the tubes, at least they're saying that they've gone down the tubes, are part of the same scam. The real estate mortgage scandals going on throughout the country and the foreclosures on homes are part of the same scam. It goes on and on and on. We could spend all this show just detailing all the different aspects of the corruption. But we have a guest tonight, and we're going to talk about possibly some of this as well as some issues regarding our status as sovereign beings. We're going to talk about the concept of the straw man and how you can extricate yourself from this corrupt system. Our guest is a biblical scholar, and he's also a constitutional scholar and has been appearing on a number of shows. He's appeared on Evident Footprints, in fact, last week, the night my father passed away. And also he has been on the Road Warrior Radio on RBN, and more recently with Frank Whalen. And Frank used to be on RBN. Now he's with another network. And our guest, let's bring him back, is Mr. Greg Pappas. Greg, welcome to Evident Footprints.
Well, thank you, Don. It's an honor to be on with you again tonight.
I've got to...
can you hear me?
Yes, I can. I've got to tell you that I appreciate what you went through the last time you were on the show, because it's not an easy thing to be informed of the death of someone's family while you're in the midst of a conversation. And I'm speechless to describe how well you handled that situation, and I want to thank you also for your prayers.
Well, I appreciate you a lot. I consider you one of the great men as a friend in my life, and I was really honored that we were able to. I mean, I was not happy that your father passed away, but knowing full well that he was not doing well, and just to be on with you, I just, you know, hope that, and it was just my heart is what's with you and is with you and your family, so it still is. So that's the motivation I have for actually doing whatever I do, Don. It's because the creator of the universe has given me a heart of compassion and caring for other people, and as you do too. That's why you do what you do. Otherwise, you wouldn't be sticking your neck out and risking things as much as you do to bring out information that that the powers that be don't want to be revealed. So, it's an honor for me to have. It's an honor for me to be on with you, and I really feel for what you've been through. So, anyways, I consider that because of friendship and the heart. So.
Well, I thank you for those kind words. The last time you were on, of course, we were talking about, as I recall, we were talking about spirituality. I seem to have been along a path, sort of been being guided by, or having been guided by spirit in a way, and it became quite evident to me that the place I was going, I was sort of being prompted to go there. And so you didn't get to discuss in full the topic that you came on the air to discuss on that show.
Well, that was okay. In fact, what you just introduced right now before I came on, that was really kind of what I wanted to talk about tonight. So it was almost like you were reading my mind before you started your discussion tonight.
What do you mean almost like reading your mind? I was reading your mind.
Read my mind tonight, because I was totally flabbergasted by your start, because that's I wanted to address the fact that everything in our society is a complete deception or a fraud, and the biggest one is the one that surrounds us in the financial world, the fact that we're all playing in a commercial realm that is completely bereft of any honesty or legitimacy. In fact, if you don't mind, if we could kind of go down this road and break down the basics of the commercial financial world, we might reveal some truth to some people that they haven't stopped and thought about. And then maybe from this discussion, we could actually open up some doors to for some practical solutions. And maybe people would stop just automatically participating in this commercial world the way that we've all been tricked into doing so. And I don't know, maybe this could be the beginning of a transformation of, we sort of dialogue worldwide. If everybody were to stop and think what a banker really does and what a banker really offers, you know, and in fact, my thesis, I guess, would be is that I don't think a banker really offers anything except slavery and a way to rob us of our labor and our energy. And if we could expose that or reveal that in a discussion tonight, I think we could be beginning the similar transformation that what Jesus did when he went into the temple in John chapter 2, and I think it's Mark chapter 21, when he cleansed the temple and single-handedly drove all these money merchant, money changers, corrupt thieves of the people out. And I think for us, it would begin with driving the money changers and the money merchants out of our minds. Once
yes.
Said out of our minds, then we could drive them out physically, you know?
Yes, yes. If I could make just a comment to preface your remarks, and this is sort of a recap of where I went after you were on the show the last week. And, okay. In fact, that was the morning of the 1st. You were actually on the 31st. On the East Coast, it was the morning of the 1st. And the whole event, which really transpired over 6 weeks, I'm speaking about my father's illness and coming to grips with the fact that he might pass on and just preparing for that, kept me in a place where, you know, I'm doing the show. I've got to be thinking about things. I'm doing research. I'm writing. I'm really studying what's going on. And that's really all head stuff. But when I get into the mode of discernment, I'm working from the heart and really searching for answers, because you can read things and, my God, where do you draw the line as to what's real and what's an illusion? And yet, being heart-centered with this family issue, I came to a complete realization that not only is it spiritual warfare, which many have been saying that we're involved in, but that it's all based upon illusion. The side, there's the God side and there's the satanic side, if you want to call that, or those that follow Lucifer. And Lucifer can only manifest his deeds through the physical realm, particularly here on Earth. So everything we're experiencing is part of this satanic illusion. And it's being created by the people that run the show. So their efforts are always on illusion, illusion, illusion. And when I stepped back, it was almost immediately, it was after I said my goodbyes to my father in the hospital, and I came to this realization, okay, I'm back. Now I'm there's no reason for me to hold on to this in the heart sense. That doesn't mean I didn't return back to that. But at that moment, I let go, and it dawned on me that everything else was an illusion. It was an overwhelmingly compelling feeling. I don't know how else to describe it. There really aren't words for that. But I shared that with you, too, and I shared that with a few other people of like mind, that what we're looking for is really not as complex as we make it, because it's all illusion. It's not, well, what do we do here, and what do we do here, and what do we do over here? It's all illusion, so it doesn't matter what it is. And if we can come to that realization, regardless of what they're doing, what their plans are, what their laws are, and the laws are basically illegal because they're violating laws in the process of creating them. They're violating the Constitution. And regardless of whether the Constitution is a private contract, they lied to us when they told it that it wasn't, you see, or when they led us to believe that it wasn't. And then, you know, to use these terms, well, if you don't know the law, too bad. it's sort of like, I use this explanation, it's like the guy that robs the bank, and he turns around and he says, well, yeah, the money was in the bank, but now I have it, so therefore it's mine. What are you going to do about it? You see, that's what these people are doing, literally. Now, if it was one individual bank robber and they caught the guy and they could, you know, they could find the money, what do you think would happen to him? Yet it doesn't apply to these people. It doesn't apply. Or that they steal the bank, the bank's money is stolen and they catch the guy and they decide they're not going to prosecute him. Instead, they're going to have the taxpayers replace that money and let the guy keep the money. You know, these are the types of analogies that you have to consider, because this is so outrageously corrupt. What else can you think of? You can only compare it to another crime. And in the case of Bernie Madoff or some people that commit some small crime, you know, they get 20 years in prison for shoplifting. And these people are stealing trillions and nothing's happening to them. Okay? So that's sort of the recap of what we've been talking about over the past week. And certainly this is spiritual warfare. There's no doubt about that. And so I turn it over to you, Greg, to say whatever it is you want to say.
Okay, well, let me add to that a little bit. That's wonderful, that what you just said, Don, and I guess I'll start here. Let's start at the beginning. What you just said there about being organized crime, for example, in 1979, I went to work for a man who was a relative in Los Angeles, and the man had a store, and I was hired to come in and help work with the store and to help expand his business. And in the process of doing so, I was exposed to the people that are behind the scenes of the things that we were just talking about, those gangsters, in essence, who rob us blind while the guy who robs a bank and gets a couple thousand dollars of useless paper goes to prison for 20 years. They're robbing trillions. And I guess let me make a preface here before I go into what really I experienced back then and say this. I believe that these people have actually stolen and then not stolen. And let me put it this way. They've stolen our labor. They've robbed us and made us and tricked us into going to work for our entire lives, thinking that we're going to get something in return. But then something like this collapse takes place, and people who've worked their entire lives, some for 40, 50, 60 years, have lost everything and are supposed to just let these institutions survive, when if you go back decades ago, most of these institutions didn't even exist. And if they did, they were very small and only participated in by a very few elite rich people. But the average man or woman had no role in these institutions that have now collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's really what it was, because I was in the mutual fund business back in late 80s, and I have a degree in management from a California State University, and while I was doing my ROTC at USC. And I saw that when I went in the financial business, in fact, when I was getting my bachelor's degree, I pretty much learned nothing. I'm serious. Nothing. Through business management, finance, marketing, statistics, took all the courses. And I realized when I was done, the only thing I really learned was from a finance professor, a man named Dr. Holland, who was a young man and very sharp. And he basically, a few of the class sessions, he broke out of his regular protocol and told each of us in class a little bit how the basic commercial world really worked, at least from the financial side of things. And let us know that pretty much the whole thing was corrupt. But, hey, you got to go make a living, guys, so go out there and get a job in it and make your way. So I had that as something in the back of my mind. Plus, when I was a kid, I couldn't figure out why the guys that ran my church were multimillionaires, and they were telling us what to do while they were violating all the commandments that the preacher was talking about on Sunday. You know what I mean, too, Don, right? How these guys operate. So,
exactly.
So I never could put it together. Go ahead.
No, I just said exactly. I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
I could never put it together. Nothing made sense. That everybody seemed to have a different dispensation than I did. Like everybody had to confess Christ except for Jews. They didn't have to confess Christ, but they were God's chosen people. None of these types of things ever made any sense to me. So so here's, so I'm still on my premise. My premise is that I believe that the financial world actually is worthless. It's absolutely worthless. It absolutely controls nothing except the illusion like you were speaking about. And that they, that from the day that we're born, this massive illusion of reality has supplanted reality. And in fact, there's a quote that was given to me off of a man who's been teaching this subject very deeply for many years. I believe this happens to be from, the, well, actually, it's a direct quote from Franklin Roosevelt's speech that he gave on January 3rd, 1935, to a joint session of Congress with the Supreme Court present. And the quote is as follows. We have substituted the illusion of reality for reality itself. And I'll say that quote again here in a minute, but I want to put it in context. That is, that's 1935. Now, if everybody remembers, Franklin Roosevelt was sworn into office in January of 1933, just 2 years earlier. And when he was sworn into office, their country was supposed to be in this great financial upheaval depression that began with the stock market crash in October of 1929. And, of course, those of us that have read The Creature from Jekyll Island know that that was conspired with the 1909 at that, that meeting there on Jekyll Island. Through this collapse. Now, this was an end of a 70-year cycle, and I've studied the cycles, and I believe the first cycle began in 1789 with a default on a debt that the Continental Congress had made with through Benjamin Franklin as the Minister of Plenipotentiary to the French king I think it's 15 million livres, which was the French currency in 1778 when Franklin made his trip over to France to borrow the money, and it was to be paid back in 10 years, the full amount, the 18 million livres, sorry, 18 million livres, L-I-V-R-E-S, I believe is how it's spelled, and it was to be paid back by 1789 plus 5% interest. All this was borrowed in gold and to be paid back in gold. So this was a real, real debt, a legitimate debt based on a substance. Now, what we were not told, and I actually discovered this on my own, that when the money was borrowed from the King of France, it was actually borrowed from the King of England because France was a vassal state of England under King George III at that time, which is not taught very often. And you can find this by reading the Treaty of Paris and the Treaty of Peace. The Treaty of Paris was signed by John Adams, and I forgot who the third one was, I'm drawing a blank, and a representative of the British. And in both cases, it was stated in there that the King of England, amongst out of a paragraph that was a page long, one of his descriptions was the most potent prince and arch-treasurer for the Holy Roman Empire, which, again, if you put that in perspective, that was in 1782, and then, of course, that would be predicated or built on an instrument that was signed in 1213, 2 years before the Magna Carta by King John I, obviously Richard Lionheart's brother, who usurped his throne, and he had signed a treaty, 1213, because of my studies, and I'm not 100% I can prove all I'm about ready to say, but I'm in the high 90s percentile certain that what would happen, John had tried to break with the Vatican in all ways, and when he tried to trade with the mainland, the Vatican blocked his commercial dealings, and he was forced to cut a deal with the Vatican. I think it was Pope Ignatius or Innocent at the time. And so this treaty predated the Magna Carta a couple of years later, or Magna Charta, depending on how you pronounce it. And then this thing is supposed to be in perpetuity. That means that when George III, his agent signed, or representatives signed for him, the Treaty of Peace, and it says that he was the most potent prince and arch treasurer of the Holy Roman Empire. Oh, I left this part out. It also said that he was a king of France, which makes no sense, unless France was under England's control. Mm-hmm. So when the money was borrowed from France, England was in control of France, and so there was necessary borrowing from England, which would explain why Jefferson was so ticked off when Alexander Hamilton was made Secretary of the Treasury, knowing full well what was going to happen. And I believe that's why Patrick Henry and other great men were not at the Constitutional Convention, because I think they would have found a way to come up with the payment of the debt so they would not be under the authority of King George III, which I believe is why Jefferson then was not made the Secretary of the Treasury as he wanted to be, was made Secretary of State to get him out of here, because of course he was the smartest of all of them. And they brought Alexander Hamilton in as an agent for the Bank of England, House of Rothschild, to be the banker to set up the first central bank, which was to immediately transfer all power to England, which is, I believe, what happened. This is why the War of 1812 took place later on, to hide the fact of all the records that Britain had control of everything. Even though there were great men that built this country, there was a deception that took place, I believe, at the beginning. setting up a 70-year bankruptcy or international bankruptcy, much like the one Jeremiah announces in the Old Testament, which Israel, or Judah, I should say, went into captivity in Babylon for 70 years. And Jeremiah called it a long time. You know, he told the people to, you know, to build houses and to plant and to raise their families and everything else because they were going to be there. Well, I think international bankruptcy I've studied is 70 times 10. I'm sorry, 7 times 10. 7 years being a bankruptcy standard. And then for a commercial, for a business, for a country, for a nation, that's times 10. And so that bankruptcy, which went into effect on 1789 with the inauguration of George Washington, and that bankruptcy was supposed to last until 1859, which I believe, under the Articles of Confederation, the southern states only had to remain in this situation until this this debt was paid off. And then once the debt was paid off, the country could go back under its own authority without having any British control, at which time the country could set up its own banking system, would not be regulated by the Rothschild bankers and their agents in New York and the D.C., and, of course, out of Europe. This is my theory now. I'm not saying anybody's actually written on all I'm saying right now. This is my studies. And I believe that in 1859, the South, seeing that they were having all kinds of regulations and legislation put upon them because of the massive amount of debt in the North, the South wanted to break free of this debt. And when, because they did not want to be burdened with this debt, we're going to set up their own separate nation. Now, they did not want to, from what I've read. It was basically forced upon them because the New York bankers controlled everything, even especially after they had the assassination attempts of Andrew Jackson, who had successfully gotten rid of their central bank. And, of course, as soon as he was out of office, they came right back with full force, many times more violently in power, predicating all kinds of busts, economic busts, until 1859, the South said, no more, we don't want this anymore. And I believe also, as you probably know this too, Don, I believe that the South had already planned on getting rid of slavery, and it was just a matter of working out the details of how they were going to end it. So we know the Civil War had nothing to do with slavery.
Yeah, there's an interesting thing, if I can interject something, because
please do.
Yeah,
yes.
What you're describing sort of hits head-on with the research I did on the McCain clan. Now, you mentioned George III, and he had sent his French paymaster, George Payser, who changed his name to George Bayshore, and he set up the Virginia Company and the railroads. There was Louis, the heir to the throne, and he was given the name Louis Payser, and then he came over here and set up the New England Company. Now, the Illuminati companies that we have today in the United States, everyone thinks companies like General Motors and Ford Motor Company and Boeing and Coca-Cola, to name a few, are American companies, when in reality they were always owned by George, and it was managed by his agents, and they recruited the names of the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and the Oppenheimers and the Bronfmans and the Astors and the Vanderbilts, on and on. All those old American names, those very, very wealthy names, were the agents for these guys.
Uh-huh.
Now, there was a gold company in Alabama that was basically the shill, or let's say the umbrella, for all of these other companies. And when Edward came to the United States, he went to Canada and then the United States in 1860. To set up the phony McCain clan. My research shows me that he did that with the aid of President James Buchanan, who was a pro-slavery president. In fact, when the king came over here, Buchanan was pushing to have Kansas turned into a slave state. So slavery wasn't just intended for the South. That is the issue that they used to as the smokescreen for the purpose of the Civil War. You're correct in that. But they were actually trying to promote more slavery. When he was then Prince Albert Edward, and he became Prince Edward, King Edward the Seventh. Okay, he according to my research, would have been the father to several illegitimate sons: John McCain, who became John Sidney McCain Sr., and then Albert McCain, who became John Sidney McCain Jr., who was the father of the current senator, John Sidney McCain, the third.
Oh, my.
They were all working for shipping companies. And, in fact, I found McCain was born in 1865, which explained why I was looking at a picture of an 80-year-old man when they said he was only 60. And they said, well, it was the... he was weathered from being out at sea. Well, so was everyone else out at sea. Why didn't they all look 20 years older? You know, it was the typical lies that they told. And they claimed that he had graduated from Annapolis in 1906. Now, I bring this up because Teddy Roosevelt actually even played a role in this. He owned the shipping company the McCains were actually working on, the United States Lines. He put them in the name of his son, Kermit Roosevelt, who ended up dying, committing suicide. And you have all of these stories. All of these men were homosexuals, particularly Buchanan. He was known to have been living with a senator, a male senator, of course. We didn't have female senators back then. And Edward stayed with him for at least 3 days, which would have been the time that they set up this Klan in Mississippi. But it all pointed to the holdings that Bayshore had set up. George Bayshore, who became or was George Payser, the French paymaster. So there is now a link between what you're saying and some of the research I did connecting the genealogical data that I discovered regarding where these people are from. And I might add also, you mentioned Alexander Hamilton. He had come in on a ship from the British West Indies, and he couldn't even prove his age at the time, much like we have going on today. Same things. People can't even prove what country they're from or who their parents are. And you know who I'm speaking about. So this was the case with McCain as well. He claimed to have been born in Panama, and the hospital he was supposedly born in wasn't built until 7 years after his birth. So, and there is a presidential executive order that was issued by Roosevelt, the same one you mentioned, to mark the boundaries to start acquiring the property and to build the hospital. And that was issued on December 17th of 1941. McCain was, that's over 5 years after McCain was supposedly born, on August 29th of 1936. Interesting how the lies are in the history, and they're in the records, or the records are totally lacking, because these are just, these are war stories. What else do you call them? So, I thought I would mention all of that, because there is a connection even to what's going on today because of this history.
This is without a doubt. In fact, what you said then is, in essence, that these guys, well, in essence, what we have here, it would appear, an organized crime syndicate running the world and being able to put anybody they want in, leading us to believe certain things are true that are absolutely untrue. In other words, we believe the illusion while they know what the truth is. And then we've been in a system that, is, even though it appears to be exploding, it's playing according to plan to what these men have laid out. Like these 70-year bankruptcy cycles that go all the way back to biblical times. You know, we have a 70-year cycle going to 1859. Well, the next one ended in 1929. With the stock market crash, and of course the next one just ended in 1999. and I kind of run some parallels that there was a gap in the 29th, after the first crash, there was a civil war. That was made a huge amount of money for the bankers and those that profited off that. And then you have the 1929 market crash, and of course that just followed World War One, which was successful to the extent that it changed the orders of things in Europe. Plus, it caused a great deal of death. And then obviously what came out of that was the flu that came out of that afterwards. It killed up to 40, 45 million people worldwide. That went home from Europe. And then, of course, then you had the postponement of World War II, which was also planned in that, I think it was the 1897 Bernard Baruch scheme, and it goes back to Albert Pike's work as well. And so when World War II started, in essence, 10 years late. It started really in 39 fully, as everything was ready to be armed. Because it took a while to get all those arms and systems ready to go. You can't just start a mechanized war without having the mechanisms. So it took a while to get that thing up and running. And then, of course, that extended now. If we take 70 years from that date, not from the 1999 date, you go to 2009, which is where we sit today. And so this whole economic model that we've been convinced is a real nightmare of debt. And I'd like to throw this out there. I don't know if I said this on your show, and I may have done it a month or so ago, but I'm drawing a blank. I'm sorry. Since wood pressure's on me lately, I tend to forget some of the things that I may have said, so if I'm repeating myself, forgive me. But I'm also not. But anyway, so the bottom line is I think that we need to show where the money comes from to fund all these things. Like in the Civil War, there's a movie called Gangs of New York. I forgot to see Martin Snow, the Scorsese, or... it was Leonardo DiCaprio was the actor in it, and that movie shows one of the scenes in that shows Irish immigrants who were put onto sailing vessels by Queen Victoria's thugs and shipped over here after she starved out with 1.5, 2.5 million of them. Just shipped them over here, and his dad just thought they were safe in a new world. And as soon as they arrived in the docks or the ports in New York, they're immediately taken by Union troops and put uniforms on them, handed a musket, and used as cannon fodder. Against the Southerners. The Southerners were slaughtering literally fresh immigrants that didn't even have a clue what was going on as they went across these battlefields. And so another form of human sacrifice.
Yeah.
And that was, what's that?
I'm disagreeing with you. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. And I think it was also funded off their heads. You know, here it is. You're a poor person. You're on a ship. You probably enslaved. Probably had your passage paid for. Whatever, you're now indentured servant for 7 years, and you get off the ship and you're going to go work for somebody, and the guy goes, nope, put a uniform on him, put a gun in his hands, and let him go die for his country that he doesn't even know what it is. Of course, nobody really knows what this country is. So and I believe also, Don, that was what financed the war. The heads of every man or woman, or man, no woman, but all men who were conscripted through the draft, which they now call, they cleaned it up, call it selective service. And they send these people off, and they realize that is the I believe, I don't have the proof about the Civil War, but I believe that it was monetized, and that was what paid the factories to build the weapons and import whatever they needed for that war, besides Lincoln's greenback situation. But for World War II, I can prove this. A friend of mine, who's a well-known legal expert, about 10 years ago or so, he taught me some things that floored me. This man's father was a private banker, an honest banker, not a Federal Reserve type banker, ran a private bank in the Fargo, North Dakota area, I believe was of Norwegian ancestry, and was a completely honest man based on the old rules of banking. And I'm not saying banking's ever been totally honest, but from what I could see, this was about as close as it got. And when my friend was a young man, and I think he's today is probably 74, so I don't know how old he was when his father began to present these facts to him, but he told him that the World War II was financed on the heads of every man who registered for the draft and went on active duty. And he said this specifically was this: his father, being a banker, understood commercial instruments and registering of securities. And so the father told him that a draft, the actual registration for the draft, was like creating the beginnings of a security. And that when they called up the draft, that was the completion of the security. So in order to actually monetize the registration of that instrument, they had to actually have the people come forward and to believe that they were forced into the military. But because this country's had rules against involuntary servitude, they would make you step forward across a line. And so when you step forward across that line, that actually solidified the contract. So anybody who gets inducted into the military, they have you line up behind the line. Then they tell you to take one step forward and become an American serviceman. What that really means is you're now giving up your rights and you're becoming the collateral for the war.
That was always under threat of fine and imprisonment, wasn't it? So,
go ahead.
Yeah, it was under the threat of fines and imprisonment. And so, you know, for fear of being imprisoned and having to pay money that you didn't have, these guys just went along with it, you know, which is a fraud. Not to mention that both sides are, both sides are using the same weapons.
Yes.
The same ammunition, the same bombs.
And the same collateral, which is us. We've always been the collateral. This is the evidence of the Talmudic issues of us being the goyim or the chattel to be used and manipulated at will because of our ignorance. They feed us enough false beliefs in the churches and in our schools, and we get all fired up and we're going to go fight, you know, without even having known what the cause is. And we literally self-destruct out of our ignorance. This is why I think the awakening that's happening right now is beginning to help us see, you know, really what's been going on all these centuries. I think it goes even back to when David, King David, was told not to count the people and to create a census and not to actually create birth certificates on those people, because the Creator knew that this Babylonian system would be used to enslave everybody, and that David would end up doing exactly the same thing that the foreign states around him had done, and that's why he gave him the mandate not to do it. Now, in Luke chapter 2, when Augustus Caesar, so it's 1,000 years later, Augustus Caesar puts out a decree to have all the world to be registered to be taxed, and of course, where's Miriam and Joseph going with the soon-to-be baby Emmanuel? They take him to Bethlehem, and of course, I think there's no accident that he happened to be born right at the time of this registration to be taxed. It's almost like a throwback to David, and David was condemned. In fact, he suffered mightily. His family suffered mightily for that violation, and as a result, I see Jesus going, having this, allowing this to happen to him, for the purpose of bringing us redemption, which I believe is commercial redemption. It's spiritual too, but they go hand in hand. The church has only taught us the spiritual redemption, never taught us the commercial redemption, because the church's objective was to keep us all slaves. Because they're the hirelings in John chapter 10 that have been used to enslave us and to keep us enslaved. And I believe, Don, that the reason that your voice is out and my voice is out, and men like this that are, of us who are artists and musicians and truth seekers, we're compelled to tell the truth because the power of the Spirit of God is in us like it was in Jesus Christ 2,000 years ago. And our job is to do what he did 2,000 years ago, was to free the people from commercial bondage. So when he went into that temple and he drove those money changers, those money merchants out twice, at least twice, maybe even more times. We know he did it when he first started his ministry, just before he went to the cross. But that is us. That's us. Well, we're not doing it as one guy. There's a bunch of us waking up and saying, hey, guys, wake up. Those of you that are supposed to be free of this thing, let's wake up. Our redemption is at hand. Let's take our redemption and do something with it. And it's practical. It's not a magic prayer, although we should be praying and meditating to the Father all the time to open us up and give us directions, as we know His Word. But on the other hand, it gives us action, and it gives us a plan. So these 70-year cycles that always go to a war, we're at that cycle now. Yet we're also at an age change now, which didn't happen before, with this age change from Pisces to Aquarius, and that 40-year window that I've addressed before. But there's a 40-year window when Moses left Egypt and they wandered in the wilderness, and those that were stuck in the old way had to die off. And then there was a 40-year window when Jesus went to the cross before Jerusalem and the old covenant system was destroyed in 70 AD. And I believe that, Don, we've entered this 40-year cycle now. Could have begun as early as my research, and I'm not the expert on this, so don't hold me to this, but May 9th, 2000 was the beginning when the planets aligned to begin the transition out of Pisces into Aquarius. And I believe that just like Jesus had transitioned us from Aries to Pisces, he introduced the concept of the introduction of this transition 2,000 years later from Pisces to Aquarius when he sent the disciples to celebrate the Passover to follow the man carrying the water pitcher, which of course we know is the symbol of Aquarius. So this genius of our the Messiah, Redeemer, Yahshua HaMashiach, Yesu Christu, going back 2,000 years ago, and he's literally sending out his disciples prior to going to the cross. And this is really significant as far as I'm concerned. They were going before the cross, and they were freeing people from this commercial bondage. Now, you have to read between the lines to see this in the text. But think about it for a moment. The reason that these religious leaders, these Pharisees, these Sadducees, these scribes, these lawyers, and all the other sects that were under dark Kabbalistic slavery system of usury, think about it. What would they be more ticked about? Because when it talks about them losing their place with the Romans, was it over the spiritual transformation of people becoming awake but still remaining commercial slaves? Or was it the fact that they were becoming awakened spiritually and they were no longer their commercial slaves, that eventually all of their power was going to be lost? These people were going to be free, and they were going to be able to stand fully under the authority of God, and that no man would rule over them. And Jesus would literally reign as their king and lord and high priest. And these people would be the kings, lords, and priests that he's over. And if you've got a society of people that are all kings, lords, and priests, will those people submit to being commercial slaves of anyone else?
Likely not.
That's been my premise for the last 10 years, where God has shown me these answers, Don. And I believe that we are literally, and I mean physically, literally, and it's all based on spiritual connections, we are literally opening up the door to see how we can become free from this whole system. And men like you and I, you and myself, you and me, are the watchmen on the wall. We're the town criers. We're the guy taking out the message. And those that have ears to hear, those that, in essence, to quote The Matrix, chose to take the red pill, or as a new joke that I talked to you about maybe today, is those that can look up and see the chemtrails for what they are. Those that can see that will get free. You know, and we got sprayed so heavy today. It was I grew up in Los Angeles, okay, and I was there during the peak of the smog, and I hated that stuff. My lungs burned, and I can tell you today, when I was outside trying to do some stuff outside in the middle of the day, the entrails here were so bad I couldn't breathe. It reminded me of being in the 7th and 8th grade in junior high school in the late 60s and breathing that air pollution that it was experiencing. And just think, most people can't even see this stuff. But those that would wake up to the chemtrails, wake up to the banking thing, we could begin to set them free. And those that become free, we start sharing with other people that start maybe to wake up, their children, if not the older generation. And I cracked the banking system sort of in one way in 1990, 91 when I went to work I was selling securities, mutual funds, and I was selling insurance, and I worked with a man who was doing mortgages. And we were both trying to be very conscientious, moral men in a system that was totally corrupt. A friend of mine had figured out how to roll first mortgages, second mortgages, even thirds, and credit card debt and auto loans into a new loan using a variable rate mortgage. We used the LIBOR at the time, didn't matter which one it was, whatever was the best rate at the time. And these would adjust every year, and we would have the people pound on their payments for the first year, making the same amount of interest they would have made if all those loans had been separate. But by going to a variable rate loan, interest rate dropped precipitously, and they could knock out a tremendous amount of principal on the loan. So when they were knocking this off, we could have people pay out their 30-year mortgages in less than 10 years and still have money aside to buy a new car with cash and have no credit cards and take a vacation. And this is where we thought we could transform the world with this idea. But neither one of us fully understood the mortgage business, how it worked. We at the time believed that actual money was being lent. And even when I came out of college, I did not have a clue really how it operated, because they made sure we weren't taught this. They directed our course of study, our course of curriculum, and never gave us the absolute answers. So what happened with me was I was having problems understanding the insurance business, because I saw it as completely fraudulent. In the investment business, I would read the prospectuses, and when I ran my own numbers in my own investments, they didn't match with the numbers that they claimed. They would claim like 18%, 20%. And I always come back with less than half of that as my real rate of return. And I was not an expert, but I had to use some pretty sophisticated software to help run the numbers. And I had some friends of mine that were mathematicians to help me figure it out. We still could never come up with the numbers they came up with. Even if you added all their fees back in, we still couldn't come up with their numbers. So I was really cynical at that point. And I'd already been to seminary and quit seminary and realized they were lying to me there too. And, you know, and I had experiences with the Air Force and all other things up to that time. Well, the long and short of it is that I went to title officers. I had lunch. My friend would take me to title officers for lunch and escrow officers, and I picked their brains over a meal. You know, sit there over a Mexican meal and chat. You know, and I would never get any answers. Nothing, Don. Every question was left more ambiguous than it was when I started. And I remembered my own escrow event in 1987, that I knew I got sick while I was going into escrow because it didn't make any sense to me. I had to jump through all these hoops. I was scared and all those other things, and yet something told me in my heart and my gut that this whole thing was a fraud, that I was being used just like the men had been drafted and everything else. Well, turns out I was right. And I went to the broker of my friend in a loan brokerage, and I asked him where did he get his money from. And the guy throws me 150 sheets of paper and says, I have 150 sources for the loans to these first trustees. And I said, wow, that's really nice. Where do they get the money? And he goes, what? I said, well, he said, well, the banks. I go, I know. Where do banks get the money? I didn't know this at the time, but according to HGR 193, June 5th, 1933, which is Public Law 7310, that says that there is no way to pay a debt, which means there isn't any money. Now, you can only discharge debts. There was no specie coin anymore to pay anything with, so we were discharging debts under public policy. This goes back to Lee Brope's work, who's this great genius, and hopefully you'll be having him on in the future, and who wrote the book USA for Republic, It's a House That No One Lives In. And he, now I can proud to say he's my friend. And he laid out the transformation that took place out of a constitutional republic into an administrative democracy, or statutory administrative democracy, which we live under this fiction world out of our birth certificates. And so I believe, and so what happened is I went to the mortgage broker and I asked him again several times, where does the money come from? And I can tell you an answer I know now, I didn't know then. But the word escrow always bugged me because it sounded French. Well, escrocade, I don't have my Black's Law Dictionary in front of me. But if you look at the word escrow in all your Black's Law Dictionaries and go to the word right above it, it's got the French word for escrow. And guess what it says? To commit fraud, to defraud. So I knew something was wrong also, that the lender was not in escrow with me. I was the only one signing it. My wife and myself were the only ones signing this deed of trust and this note and all these other ridiculous pieces of paper to make us feel real important, like this was a real transaction going on. And, of course, my friend Roger, the one that taught me about the fraud of the draft, he called the word escrow. He said escrow is like the crow's nest on the Titanic. There's a couple of guys sitting up there, and they're supposed to steer the ship off course when they see danger. So what escrow really is about is a way of hiding the fraud or masking the fraud of this simple fact, and I'll lay it out like this. I asked the mortgage broker finally after two or three visits to his office. I said, where's the money come from? He goes, well, you're not satisfied with my answers, so where the heck do you think it comes from? And I looked at him. I said, are you serious? You're not going to tell me, and you want me to say what I think it is? I said, well, I think it's this. See me? See you? We're energy. With the energy of the creation here, and the power of God is in us. And I believe that your banks, which are these dead entities, they lend absolutely nothing. That I'm the one that's creating the money for the bank, and the bank is taking my asset and making it it's taking its liability and handing me its liability, and taking my asset and taking my asset for itself. And so, in essence, you're not lending anything. It's a complete fraud. And I'm going to work for the rest of my life to pay something that I created with my signature. Well, the guy turned red, looked at me in the face, and said, get the hell out of my office.
Hmm. Now, in the old French, the word escrow or escrow means scrap. And then in medieval times, in German, it means shred. Okay, so those are kind of interesting words. And fraud would be an analogy, the same thing. I mean, I don't think they're actually alluding to the entirety of the meaning. In other words, you know, This is an activity. The way it's normally presented is like a bond or a deed. Something that's being held in trust until there's a performance of a promise in a note, and they have these escrow companies. The first thing they do is get their hands in this money. They're drawing interest while they hold onto this money, and if you add up all the escrow accounts, and this is how it works with derivatives and hedge funds and grants and bonds and all the different forms of payment that we have for public projects, they're pooling all these resources, and of course, real estate is also part of that too. Actually, any kind of security agreement, an auto loan would be such a thing. The rental of furniture or appliances. It's just on and on.
Credit cards, everything.
Yeah, any purchase made through a security agreement is doing that. This is why they can afford to offer 12 months the same as cash, because for 12 months they're drawing interest on that money.
Absolutely, without a doubt. That all they need is your signature. These are all unilateral contracts. You know the sad part about this is, Don, Thomas Jefferson and great men like him that really, really did know the creator of the universe, they had set up a government where the states controlled the federal government. And this federal government was just to be a trustee, and the people were to be the beneficiaries of the trust. This scam has taken place and has been on and off, as obviously this attempt was made right off the bat with Hamilton. This attempt that was done was to basically make themselves the trustees and the beneficiaries, and they pulled it off in 1933 and fully in 1948 to make us receiving benefits, which means they can do whatever they want to us. And by the way, a benefit can be drafting you, sticking a gun in your hand, and getting you blown up by a mine in Iraq. They can call that a benefit. That's how the system is so perverse. And they get away with that by following the Babylonian Talmud and the Kol Nidre, which is sworn on Yom Kippur, which is an oath that you've probably read, and it's in the book Occult Theocracy, on the chapter on Judaism. And this quote, I don't know word for word, it's only little two paragraphs, but in essence is that these people, they disavow all oaths that they're going to take for the next 12 months, so they can literally get on a witness stand and lie to their teeth to the point where they have people executed in cold blood, because, of course, in their understanding, and this, they believe that we are all chattel. But this crosses over beyond just the Jewish, the Zionist oath. It goes into Freemasonry. It goes into all the groups that behind the scenes control this thing, these pedophiles, these homosexuals that run the world, and these women beaters and torturers, and these are the people that hold this. And by the way, they could go to your church. They may be in your local church. They could be your pastor. You know, in 2002, my uncle, who won the Bronze Star with an Oak Leaf Cluster for Valor in Italy, he took out a machine gun nest single-handedly after his whole platoon was being taken, while they were being taken out by fire, machine gun fire, and by mines blowing up. And my uncle, who had never talked about this, only knew about this after his death in 2002. He was a true hero. He didn't see it as a hero. He saw it as the perverseness of war. That's why he would never talk about it. He had a really good heart. He, at his funeral, his cousin, like the same man that I worked for in Los Angeles when I was exposed to the secrets of Freemasonry, gave the Masonic handshake to the minister that officiated the funeral. And I saw this. And then they gave the Masonic hug. I saw that. And they came to me, well, the minister says, well, we know each other. And I go, yeah, you're both Masons. And yeah, how'd you know? And I said, because I know everything. I'm an observer. And the guy, well, go ahead. So even at my uncle's funeral, this honorable man, the minister that officiated, is one of the swine that helped enslave us.
Yeah, yeah. And you're describing the secret societies, which all sprung out of the Middle Ages, you know, the Crusades, where you had all this rampaging and pillaging and all the loot being turned over to the Pope, which eventually, you know, they decided, hey, you know, why are we giving him all this money? We can keep it for ourselves. We can start our own group. So then they work out a concordat of sorts, like they do with a lot of the countries around the world, specifically these days in Central and South America.
Yes.
Where they, you know, if they don't go along with it, then they can't get food, they can't do international trade, and they may even find themselves attacked.
Absolutely. This is why this is how they control the world. But you know something, though? There still really is only a little man, little old man behind the curtain, like in The Wizard of Oz. If you quote Roosevelt, the jerk, you know, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Well, I believe that these people, their little illusion is falling apart. And I can actually think we can offer the beginnings of some solutions. Well, they think that they've conquered, they brought us back under their old world order. See, I think Jesus established the new world order. The New World Order is grace and love, and agape love, and it's peace and joy and compassion. It's community. It's people coming together and building their...
Well, it sounds like we've lost Greg's audio. I don't know if he's still there. He's disappeared. Seth, if you're hearing us, and you can try... Yeah, we've lost him. If you can try to bring him back, that would be wonderful. Okay, we're trying in real time to get Greg back on the line here.
Don, somebody cut us off.
Yeah. Well, that happens sometimes when we're telling the truth on this show, believe it or not.
Well, I believe that. I mean, I could hear the thing go as it was about ready to go. I mean, it was weird. They don't want this to go out because this is true freedom. We could break the whole system in 60 days. Should I go straight to the jugular? Should we lay it out?
Yeah, why don't you in our closing moments here? Sure.
Okay, well, let's go for the jugular here. The bottom line is all of us can opt back into the Republic. We can opt out of this game. We can choose our political choice. We can make a political choice to leave this fraudulent statutory administrative world and go back under God's law, which, according to Thomas Jefferson, is the law of nature and nature's God, which is what he orchestrates there in that wonderful Declaration of Independence, one of the most profoundly, wonderfully written documents in the history of the world, where he uses the word dissolved. And I don't have a copy in front of me, but everybody should read it. Read it. That is one of the most powerful documents in the history of the world, or maybe the most outside of the scriptures. And I would say that alone will start us seeing who we are. We are the children of the creator of the universe, and we are not intended to be slaves of these people that have enslaved us. It's time for us to find our freedom. And freedom comes practically in a physical sense as well as spiritual. It starts spiritually and it grows to the physical. But I believe that, Don, if we offer ourselves back into the Republic, we can free ourselves so powerfully that the other side don't know what to do. As you said, they only operate on this physical plane. They cannot operate on the spiritual plane. And we do. And so that's why, you know, you're the great artist that you are, and you know, I write music too, and this is coming from the source of everything. So if we see this, if we can break free, we can first time we realize that these debts that they claim we owe, we don't owe a penny of this stuff. In fact, the very people that have scammed us owe us everything, and I mean beyond everything. Literally, their eternity in a place that would be called hell couldn't pay what they've robbed from us.
Yeah, in fact, they owe us what they've stolen from us, don't they?
Physically, yes, and that's stuff we're working on right now, and I don't have all the answers to that yet, but on the practical sense, their system is predicated on ever-increasing debt. In other words, that's why you have to have some of the illegal aliens coming in, because we're not buying anything. They need to have new heads to place on the debt, so they need new birth certificates to monetize. And if they're monetizing these for anywhere from $500,000 to $700,000, $1 million, who knows what they're monetizing them, they need these to keep this racket going. But the other way out of this thing is this. Stop playing the game. You know, the war games with Matthew Broderick, the computer was asked, well, how do you win the game? He says, well, there's only one way to win the game. It's not to play. And, yeah. And we keep playing the game. Or in the movie The Matrix at the very end, when Neo stands up, he says no. We need to stop playing the game and say no.
Let's back up just for a second here. Okay, you mentioned illegal aliens, and many of them are coming in from the borders of Mexico, but they're coming from all over the place, from all over the world. And so you have to look at the fact that these other countries, if they are in a worse financial state, and I'm not speaking about bankruptcy per se, but as far as their workforce, the availability of jobs, although we're beginning to lose them now by the millions, it seems, every week, they're bringing these people for the purpose of destroying this country, because they certainly would suffer the same consequences. In fact, they're getting more offered to them by coming here than they have over there. So it's not a question of Americans won't do the jobs. You know, people are out of work. You post jobs, people apply for them. And this political rhetoric of, well, these are jobs Americans don't want. When did that stuff start? That started when all the corruption started to be exposed.
Right.
They came out with this around the time we started talking about the trillions of dollars that they were embezzling. That's about when this really started happening. Okay? And they've been doing this since 1981.
But the fact that they need these illegal aliens to come in, not just for being able to mess with us, but that they continually expand their system. But think about this. Their system would collapse instantaneously if everybody stopped doing several things. One, stop repaying all the loans and put them all on notice to prove evidence off a ledger that can be verified that something of substance was lent. Nothing of substance was lent, there's a complete fraud there. Secondly, I believe that when you look at your deed of trust and it has the word security agreement, lender, and borrower, the three key words on the cover sheet, on the front page, they're all in quotation marks. But when they're quotation marks, you should be able to go into the body of the instrument and find the definition of those words. They're not defined in the instrument. So when the security agreement, I believe, based on my understanding of grammar, and you can go to the United States Printing Office style manual online and check this out yourself, but I believe anything's in quotation marks and it's undefined, it's now the opposite of what the regular meaning of the word is, unquoted. Because they're not telling you where they're quoting it from. So it's not quoted from. A security agreement is a non-security agreement. A lender is a borrower, and a borrower is a lender, and they're literally telling us on the instrument that we are lending them the money, but because of our ignorance, we think we're borrowing something.
Yeah.
Now, these simple facts would be exposed on a grand scale. Literally, bankers would be running for the hills. Politicians who endorse them and the attorneys that protect them and the judges who protect them would all be running for the hills because they'd realize that the people waking up and realize the same thing that Jesus told in Luke chapter 11, verses 37 to 54, when he said, "Woe to you, Pharisees, for you tied to ruin the knit and you pass over the judgment." Then after he curses them, which was a curse, when you insult them, you insult us also. Jesus turned all his wrath on the lawyers, who were the gatekeepers, and the gatekeepers were nailed three times. First time, saying that they put burdens on men, that they don't lift a finger to help them and leave the people with this weighted burden while they rob them and kill them. And the second one is he condemns them for all the deaths of all the prophets from Abel until Zechariah. And then he puts a curse on them and he says, "Woe unto you lawyers, for you hide the key of knowledge. You hinder those that are entering, i.e. the kingdom, and you don't enter the kingdom." And that curse, I believe, it should fully affect on those that are the gatekeepers and operating the system today. And if any of us wake up and can actually implement this on a grand scale, the world could be transformed back to the kingdom of our Lord, Jesus Christ, and away from this darkness of this system that's operated under satanic minions and their powers. And so, and the other things I would say out there, and you may not be allowed to say this again, is everybody, and I'm advocating this for everybody who really wants to be free. Those that want to be slaves, please don't listen to this. But stop contributing on the tax side of things and learn how to become free of the obligations of income taxes and all the other things that help fund and feed this beast and keep it going. The beast disappears and disintegrates the moment that we choose to stand under the authority of God and trust Him for all of our blessings and everything else instead of continuing to turn to man's ways, and then we can be free. But
yeah,
anyway.
Now the money they supposedly lend when people are applying for loans comes out of thin air. That money's manufactured literally out of thin air.
Yes,
why
it is.
Can't the payment, the repayment, be out of thin air?
It absolutely can be, I believe. And I don't have any answers, and I don't want to give any hints as to any research that we're working on right now. But I don't have answers, and I don't know that I'm going to be the one to find the answer. So let's put that out there first. Anything that's going to come in is going to come from God Himself. And through the mercy that we have because of our connection through Jesus Christ, Yahshua HaMashiach. And I believe that that anything we are given is essential for our awakening. Now, that's why there's so many topics that are relevant. You know, why do you think these guys have to chemtrail so much or use so many poisons? I mean, why do they have to keep us dumbed down with all this entertainment? You know, all this stuff is distractions that keep us from waking up that we would naturally do if we didn't have all this distraction. Well, the day we're born, we're given all this extra work to do and to chase after this and that. And if you think about it, like you were talking about with what happened with your father's situation, we have to step back and pause and see what life is really all about. It has nothing to do with the games that we're playing. That's one of the reasons that I had to, you know, my business failed a few years ago completely, and I have I really wanted to dedicate myself to helping unravel this mystery of this commercial world. You know, commerce means, is one of the definitions is war masquerading as peace. And I feel like every time I'm stuck back into the commercial world, I'm going to war with everybody. So when everybody says, how are you today, they really say, how can I stick you in the back and take what you've got because I need it to pay my bills. Mm-hmm. That's how I see society has degenerated to. And
well,
I don't
know. I was going to say, you may look at your business as having failed, but in reality, if it brought you to this realization, it was a success.
It was a success. Yes, you're right. It's a blessing. It's a blessing. And the people that it's brought me to, like you and other those friends of mine that I would never have had I not taken this path, is well worth it. And money doesn't mean, I mean, there is no money. So, and besides, you know, the funny thing is, I've been accused of being lazy because I do radio shows and I talk about things and I lecture things and I don't. And I was telling another show the other day. I said, so the concept of a movie called Pay It Forward. It was at Billy Joe Osment, the young man, and it was a major actor. It's Kevin Spacey. And in this movie, this thing was asked, how can you change the world? And he said, he went and did three acts of kindness for three people and told everybody that he did the acts of kindness for to go do that for the other people. And I believe that if we would live our lives that way, kind of like the Amish do, where they go out and build each other's homes and their barns and help each other, or if those that are listening tonight are starting to get knowledge and information from you, Don, and from myself, and through BBS Radio and others that put it out, that people would take maybe their tithe that they're going to give to a local church and to some maybe John Chapter 10 hireling minister and give it to those of us that are actually going to help free them, acting in the capacity of the Redeemer who knocks on the door and says, here's the truth, are you ready to receive it and apply it? And if we can take these acts of pay it forward and kindness and go from here, I believe that our Redeemer would actually hear our prayers and bring mercy to us and free us from all this thing, and it's going to start with our interacting with each other and loving each other, and then seeing the dark forces in our midst for what they are. You know, not pulling out the wheat because we might pull, I mean, not pull out the tares because we might pull out the wheat with it. But if we can see that we give to, we work with those that are really freeing us, then we will begin the transformation. And I think your message, like on your show, your wonderful broadcast here, would go far and wide all over the world, and the whole world, I think, is ready for a message like this, Don.
Yeah, well, I hear it is going all over the world, but, you know, we want more listeners, of course. I agree with you there, and we want people to respond to what information is coming out, you know, at least to, we're not asking people to believe this, you know, I'm not into that. I would prefer that they make their choices, they take the responsibility for their lives and weigh out how they would choose things to be, because yeah. We do have that. We're given that choice by God. And you had mentioned in terms of the natural order of things, I had this discussion last Friday with my guest Jim Murray, and I had brought up the point that nature provides for itself by following God's laws. Yes. It's they're ingrained in nature and they're immutable laws. And it's only through the interference of man that animals and nature suffers. Man's interference has always brought down the level of the vibration of nature. And if we are part of nature by our birthright, then we should be able to follow the same laws and be self-sustaining. We don't need the banking system to survive. Birds don't use the banking system, and other animals, all the fish in the sea, have never benefited 1 second from the banking system. So,
right.
You know,
they've been damaged by it. What do you mean? Look at the toxin, the waste that's been dumped into the seas and everything else as a result of destroying, taking hemp off the earth and putting industrial plants on earth or chemicals, you know, like cotton, for example. It takes massive amount of chemicals and water to keep it growing, yet hemp per acre would grow, I don't know, 10 times as much material for fabric. And of course, we know the original Levi Strauss 501 denim jeans were made out of hemp, and they lasted forever. And we couldn't have that because obviously commerce needs to have continued replacement by the who we consumers must keep consuming because and we ultimately what have we done? We've consumed ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Well, Greg, we're out of time. It's been a very interesting show, and we've got you on again a couple more times this month, so I look forward to your next visit here on
Thank
Evan
you. I look forward to it.
And I want to, it's time to say goodnight to our listening audience. You have been listening to Evident Footprints and our guest, Greg Pappas, on bbsradio.com. And be sure to keep tuning in for more shows. I've got Ken Adachi joining us tomorrow evening. In the meantime, special thanks to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible and Seth Hendrick for the sound. Most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.